Hello and welcome to Secondhand Film Critics, your favorite source for mildly pretentious, semi-uneducated, and highly unqualified opinions on movies. I'm Kayla, and I'm here with my co-host...
Noah Pevensey.
Ooh.
That's me.
And I am Mr. Beaver. Just kidding.
You have to... Can you do the voice?
The Mr. Beaver voice?
Yeah, the Mr. Beaver voice.
No, I bet Zach could, though.
Ooh, let me think. Wait, what's the one line that he has in the movie? Well, you can't just leave!
Yeah.
That's way better than I would have done. Oh, boy.
Oh, man.
So, maybe you recognize that voice. That is our good friend Zach Smith-Michaels.
Hello.
Who's been on the podcast before of Godfellas. You've been on multiple times, actually.
Yeah, I have.
For the first time, we have Hannah, who also hosts Godfellas, and will be joining us for this episode, which is very exciting.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
We're playing the long game. I just want to be picked for a triple feature for one of the episodes. this is I'm trying to serve my tenure before that happens.
That's so true. We always just have
that means he'll been on all of the main series, right?
Because
this is the childhood classics. Already did a We've Never Seen. Cinema Swap is just me and Kayla, so that one is not.
Yeah.
One of the
so if you did a triple feature,
you can't be on it, Zach.
Fine.
It would be your triple feature would be the trifecta, all three.
Yeah, audience, I think we all want that. So just get it in the get them in the comments, you know.
Oh my gosh, we'll do it. I didn't know that you wanted to. You could have just said something.
You know, put it on the schedule.
This is the first I'm hearing of this. So
before we get into our main episode topic, which is The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Well, let's go over our questions we got to our last question of the week, which was, what is your favorite scary movie?
Dun, dun, dun,
that was the the ghost face voice. We got a couple answers to this one, though.
We did.
Which is cool. We have Joe, who answered on Spotify. Always love when we get some Spotify answers. He said, not really a horror movie, but the 1970 version of Scrooge still scares me. Sometimes
that's an interesting
it's those
choice.
Older movies that you watched when you were a kid and they scared you, and then there's like that one moment that sticks with you. There's a couple of moments in this movie coming up that we're about to talk about that scared me. So it's maybe that this is my favorite scary movie.
Hunter said Hereditary, which I haven't seen, but I've heard is frightening.
You know, it's a good one. I don't know if that's a hot take, but it's good. Dan said The Descent, which is this like officially even a horror movie? I don't think so. It's another one that's like more thriller.
And he said it can't get more intense than cave monsters hunting you in the dark.
That's true.
That sounds scary to me. That sounds like something I don't want to watch. I hate caves. I'm very claustrophobic.
Really?
Do not like the idea of ever being in a cave.
Anti-cave.
I would literally rather die than have to like crawl through a cave away from monsters.
Wow.
Like that just sounds like worse than, you know, than
you heard it here first, folks.
Yeah.
Kayla would rather die.
Like if I were stuck
in
that kind of horror movie, like God, just eat me in the first 5 minutes. I just can't. I can't go through that.
I definitely would already be that character that dies first. Like, I'm the one where once I die, then that's when they realize, oh, wow, this is a serious movie where people can die. Like, I'm the character that is just there to signal to the audience that other people can
die. Yeah, I think my problem for those is, like, I'm out of shape. So I just know that, like, if I started running from something... My stamina won't keep up. I'm gone.
Well, in a cave, too, you got to do some jumping, some hopping.
Can't see. I
don't
know.
Some ducking.
And then we do have an answer here from Zach. Do you want to just say your answer?
I can't believe it. Well, I couldn't put all 9 of the Saw films down.
Oh, God.
So I had to say The Shining. No, I love The Shining. I love Stanley Kubrick and... Yeah, The Shining is just a fantastic movie, and I hear from people all the time, like, I don't think it's that scary. I I think it's very scary.
I'm
also a lightweight with horror, but
yeah, I haven't seen it in a while. I remember when I watched it, I didn't think it was particularly scary, but also I don't know if it was even the point. Like a lot of people, I think you can get really caught up when you're watching a horror movie where it's like, am I actually scared right now? Or like, that's not always even the point of a movie.
Yeah, yeah. I would agree in that, like, for me, is it the scariest movie I've ever seen? No. Few things are more disturbing than Jack Nicholson chasing his son with an axe.
So it's just
more like, it's very deeply, like, unsettling, like, in my soul.
I'm reading this for that book for a writing class I'm in right now, and I was reading it today, and it was a very snowy blizzard outside, so it's a pretty great setting for reading that. And I'll probably want to rewatch it again, like, after I finish it, because obviously, like, it's never a better time than after you finish a book to then rewatch the movie.
And apparently Stephen King hates the movie, so...
He does.
Apparently.
Stephen King hates a lot of things, though, so... We are here to talk about another book-to-movie adaptation, which is 2005?
Yep.
The Lion, the Witch, and the... Yeah, 2005, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Chronicles
This is
of
an entry... in our childhood classic series, which is basically, we just go back to some classic childhood movies that
we
grew up with, we loved, we continue to love. We've done The Pacifier and Matilda, I think. Those are the two,
and Charlie
right?
Brown. We did Charlie Brown.
And Charlie Brown, you know?
Good.
So we're continuing on with another one of our collective favorites from when we were kids. Both... I think, like, the books and the movie, too.
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
I don't know if I ever loved the books, but I definitely read them. And so it's, like, Narnia in general is already, like, a part of my childhood. So even if I didn't love the book, like, it's still, like, very connected.
Yeah, I loved the books.
Yeah, well, we can talk about that. We can get into all of that. but first, let's quickly read the summary for anyone who is unaware of what the Chronicles of Narnia is. Because, you know, I don't know what the kids are up to these days. Is Narnia on TikTok? I don't know. So maybe we'll get them up to date now with this. Did you write this summary?
I did, yeah. I did write it.
Wow, an original.
It's an original
summary.
An original summary by me.
It's World War II, and the Pevensey children are not safe at home. They are sent out of London and end up in a mysterious old professor's mansion in the middle of nowhere. But the professor isn't the only mysterious thing around the house. Lucy, the youngest, claims to have discovered an entrance to a snowy world in the back of a wardrobe in one of the spare rooms. What mysteries really lay beyond the fur coats, and will the Pevensey siblings be able to come together to overcome the dark forces hidden away in the cabinet?
Dramatic.
I don't know. Yeah. Will they be able to overcome the dark forces? That's what we're here to find out.
Amen.
Oh, boy.
Did you guys watch this movie a lot growing up? Was this like a classic for you, or was it something that you didn't like particularly care for?
Yeah, I would say it was. I watched it a moderate amount of times. It was one of the movies I would bring with me on road trips because it was long. So it helped like pass the time in the car. The first time I saw it, though, I hated it because I was seven when the movie came out. My whole family saw it right after Christmas. And from the scene at the stone table until the end of the battle, I was like in my mother's lap weeping because of how scared I was.
Oh, my God.
Like, this movie terrified me.
Yeah.
Like, mom fully having to like rock in the seat with me, like, cradled like a baby. Like, it's okay. It's not real. And I'm like,
It looks real.
But then once I, you know, got a little older, I enjoyed it, though. I liked this one. And I never saw Voyage of the Dawn Treader, but I'd watch Prince Caspian from time to time.
You're not missing out.
Yeah, Voyage of the Dawn Treader is definitely not a great entry.
It's very bad.
Oh, really? Oh.
Do you disagree?
I don't have a strong opinion either way. It gave us Will Poulter, so I mean, hey.
It did.
That's true.
So maybe we'll cover the other
true.
Two eventually.
Yeah, it's just very...
Know? I've got things to say on both of them.
Yeah.
Oh.
Sure.
Check out our show, Godfellows, where we'll...
we just said tonight, maybe we should do
We're
Prince
just saying
Caspian
tonight, let's
soon.
Do Prince Caspian, because we did Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, like, That was our fifth episode of Godfellas. And yeah, so me, I was 12 when this movie came out, but I grew up with the British Broadcasting Company. They did like a made-for-TV miniseries that I was gifted.
Yeah. I have seen that.
Yeah, I was gifted that like pre-going to school. So there's not a time in my life that I don't remember being heavily influenced by Narnia. In fact, when I was a child, I went to college for kids for acting and heard that they're making this movie and was like desperately trying to figure out how I could audition to be in it. It didn't work out, unfortunately.
Bummer.
So there were a lot of like going into the movie, like, could I act better than either of these kids? Am I
evaluating I did that better in my audition.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have said the line like that, but
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Oh, that was a choice. All right. But no, I saw the movie. I liked it. I've rewatched it a couple of times. For me, even at a young age, I'd already seen things like you know, Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter. And this feels very derivative of those. But I still think, like, watching it today, I was like, it's well made. I think it has enough of its own voice that it's unique. It was an entertaining, cool effort from Disney. So it's one that the movie in and of itself, I didn't rewatch a bunch. But, I mean, I've always been a big fan of the Narnia lore.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's a good point, because it definitely does feel like the Return of the King won Best Picture, and then Disney looked and was like, what properties do we own that we could make into our Lord of the Rings?
You know why Disney wanted to do the property, though, right? It was because of Harry Potter.
Mm, yeah.
Because Harry Potter was so successful that they said, oh, let's try to get something we can franchise.
And I think they originally planned on making all 7 books.
Yeah.
Which obviously they were going to go in written order then, because this is the second in the timeline, but this was the first book that was written.
Growing up, my dream role, acting role, was Polly from The Magician's Nephew.
I knew it.
And then...
Wow. Yeah, that's my favorite Narnia book.
The older that I got... the sadder that I got, because I was like, I will never be able to play the role of Polly.
Kayla, have you seen a little movie called The Irishman?
Hey.
Because they can now just make you younger.
That's true.
So I think that the cards, it's still in the cards for you.
Yeah.
Your dream is not
so
lost.
I think Disney, if you're listening and you want to revisit the franchise, you can cast Kayla... As Polly, you can cast me as like Edmund.
Gosh.
Yeah. I think
I'll be towering over the other kids.
Sounds like a great
childhood dreams to star in the Narnia franchise.
I watched this movie a ton. I was 5 when it came out, so I don't think I saw it in the theater. It probably would have been too scary to see in the theater, but it was like one of those that was also pretty scary for me. I don't remember much about being scared of the battle. But the stone table scene, like, I think
it's
it was a good few years until I could open my eyes during that scene. You know, that was an intense.
I mean, all the
scene.
Like wardrobing in that, like all the creatures and stuff.
Yeah,
it's pretty intense. The how far they go, like they definitely wouldn't do this much today. It would be a lot more toned down. But I did watch this so many times, so much so that like I think the last time I rewatched this was almost 2 years ago. And then watching it this time, I was thinking to myself, like, I like this movie, but I'm going to have to wait like 10 years before I watch it again. Cause like, I know it way too well. Like all of each scene, the tones of like the dialogue, like how the pacing goes, like, it's just like, I know it inside and out. So it's one of those where like, I'm going to have to wait a while till I watch this again. But I do think it's like, it really holds up, and it's a great example of something that I don't think we get enough of anymore, which are like these mid-2000s family Disney blockbusters that take themselves pretty seriously and don't like have all these, I don't know, like it just felt like something that I am a little nostalgic for now. Is like,
I guess someone missed Artemis Fowl.
Oh my God. I did see that movie, and you know, It was not great.
Yeah, I feel like the like more comparable sort of movie today would be like Jungle Cruise or something. Like,
which I liked. Mm-hmm. I liked Jungle Cruise.
But like,
I liked Jungle Cruise.
Jungle Cruise.
I want to go back to what you were saying, Noah, about like Narnia is taking itself so seriously, mm-hmm. and Jungle Cruise was just like, hey, like we're not that serious, everyone. Yeah, which is like point. Actually, it was one of my frustrations with the movie. I was like, hey, not everything has to be like, you know,
the Rock
looking at the camera and winking. Yeah, I was like, we could like have a stone table but moment in this movie.
That's also the ride, like the Jungle Cruise ride at Disney Parks is like Skipper's making jokes as you go through the jungle.
I do think probably Jungle Cruise is more comparable to Pirates because that was also a ride. Yeah. And that obviously also doesn't take itself as seriously. Yeah, I think there's like there. But even I think Jungle Cruise, like it doesn't feel as modernly funny as other movies where it is a little quippy. But it didn't have as much of like a pop culture flair to it where it's like they're obviously trying to like do some reference that kids are going to get. Oh, look, the Rock is going down the river and he's flossing. That's like what what I hate. But yeah.
I'm pretty sure that I saw Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe in the theater when it came out.
I saw it in like a retro old school theater that was only showing like one movie at a time. So it was like an experience. The Lafayette Theater in Suffern. Yeah, it was. I saw it there, and yeah, there was something about being in that theater that kind of added to the flavor of the movie for sure.
We watched it a lot, like over and over and over and over, like just repeatedly.
Not to get too churchy here, this was one of like the cool youth group movies that we would watch every now and then. Like, like if someone didn't plan something out, they'd be like, movie night, we're going to watch Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. So this is one that like showed up there like a lot or in Sunday school. And it was one that we would be more excited about watching because we're like, oh, good. It's not like Left Behind or something like that. This is actually like a really well-made Disney film.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't feel like it's patronizing. Like, I think when you're a kid, and I think that can be comparable to like maybe other movies that they would show at a youth group. It's like you want a movie that makes you feel cool. And I think that this movie, like, if you're watching this as like a 10-year-old, this can feel like, oh, this is what adult movies are like, you know? And it's like, it doesn't feel like, oh, this is just a movie that they made for kids and it's just for me, but no one else is really like, I think this is a movie that can be enjoyed by anyone and that really has like a sense of its own self to it. And that's maybe something too, where I'm maybe more nostalgic for something like that, that feels like more in the middle rather than just like, this is definitely for kids or this is definitely for adults.
Well, that's interesting. I wrote in my notes, and Hannah and I kind of had a back and forth when we were watching this today, and the movie opens with like the bombing raids in London. I remember hearing like in the commentary, the director said, I did this to kind of have the audience wake up a little bit. Cause you know, he's like, I think they were expecting to see a movie that starts with four kids in a house. And I wanted to shake them up a little bit. And I was like, from a directorial like standpoint, that's actually not a bad idea. The problem is then the movie doesn't like tell you what just happened. So I feel like if you're 5, 6, 7, you might be sitting in the theater going like, what's happening?
And I definitely never knew what was going on in that first 5 minutes. Like I vividly remember like not understanding what was happening.
Yeah. So the parents are there like, oh, I get this. And the kids are kind of going like, what? So I think this movie, like, it kind of has maybe a bit of a hard time figuring out who its audience is, but I think that they're like, we're going for the whole family. Mm-hmm. It definitely doesn't feel like its main target is children, I would say.
My favorite thing about that was in your notes, you wrote Edmund is sick and Lucy is stupid because of Edmund just like so fascinated by like the literal war happening.
His neighbors are all dying and he's just like,
wow. And then when you do your Lucy, you're like,
she's just like laying in bed as bombs are going off, like, ah! I was like, move, like, run,
get out of there.
Well, especially when like they've probably practiced these like run to the bomb shelter, you know, routines as a family before. So it just is like,
yeah, if you have the shelter, they definitely practiced. Like...
Yeah, it's a very strange opening for sure.
And then one of my other favorite moments is Edmund goes, "Wait, Dad," and runs to get a picture of his.
He
runs in to
get
a picture of his dad, which is stupid, but. Like, let's break down what he does. He runs in to get a picture of his dad for, like, the family, and then Peter, like, throws him down the ground. He's like, "Why can't you think of anybody but yourself? You're so selfish all the time." And I was like, is that what he was being?
Getting a picture of their father.
He definitely was getting that for his family.
The thing that was so funny about that scene to me when I watched it now, that, like, obviously you never notice as a kid, but he, like, throws Edmund in and then is, like, yelling at him, and then he's like, "All right, I'm going to close the door now." And I'm like, you just went through this whole speech and, like, didn't even close the door behind you, like, yelling about it being unsafe.
Yeah.
It's not like Edmund was going in to grab his Game Boy. Like, oh, wait, I forgot. I'm in the middle of a gym battle in Pokemon Red. I need to get it. Yeah, it's obvious. Yeah, I don't. Peter is a little annoying in this movie. Like,
did he seem way too old to either of you? I was like, it seems like he's here to be like the tween-age heartthrob or something.
Well, he definitely
like,
was.
I mean, he was.
Like, he was him. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, I feel like he was cast for that, but he definitely like reads as too old and he's not a very good actor.
They do show that scene where like he's looking at the other kids his age who are like going off to war and he's being like shipped off with his siblings. So I think they kind of like give you sort of a visual of that, of like he is maybe a little bit like he should be going to war, but he's not, I guess.
Yeah, which is maybe part of his character too, because he feels like he's being shipped off to this place in the middle of nowhere, but he feels like he really should be fighting. And then they go to Narnia. And then he's like, "You guys need to go home, but I'm going to stay and fight." Like, what are you going to do? You haven't held a sword once.
Yeah.
Like, they have just as much experience as you. But
the fact that he is not killed instantly in that battle at the end is bananas.
Well, yeah, he's had a sword 2 days, 3 days, maybe. And he just goes into battle with the White Witch. Like, I got
it's
this.
In
I'm
his
gonna,
blood.
I'm going to lean my.
It's his calling.
Well, I'm going to lean back.
Just because some guy in a red suit gives you a sword doesn't make you a hero, Peter.
Oh, boy.
Susan's right there to remind him.
Oh, yeah.
She will not.
Yeah, great line. Great line by her. Really
good. Yeah. Yeah, okay. I guess we'll just let him kill us. Thank you, Susan. Sweet.
The ever-encouraging Susan. Yeah.
I do think that even though the acting isn't particularly amazing, I don't really think it matters because I think that the real star of the show is, like, the world and all the other characters, and they're more just, like, archetypes, basically, that are there to just, like, guide us through the story.
Yeah.
And I do think that the way they look and the way that even, like, they quote-unquote act, like, I do think that the casting is very good. Not saying, Zach, that you shouldn't have been cast as Peter, but if you weren't cast, I think this was like, these were the next best options.
I wanted Edmund, but okay.
Okay, well, I don't know if I, maybe. Maybe you should have gone for a different role. Maybe that was the issue.
And then when I was in the play, I didn't get cast as either. So, I mean, it wasn't in the cards for me.
It wasn't meant to be. Well, like I said, the real star of the show isn't really the kids. It's everyone else.
The CG, like, held up surprisingly well, I thought.
Yeah.
Well, I think, too, because they're using so many actual practical effects that there was a lot of stuff I assumed was CG. And then I watched the episode of, like, that prop series they did on Disney Plus. And when I watched that, I was like, wow, there's a lot of stuff in here that I didn't realize was practical. Like, all of the Minotaurs and just, like, there's so many things that are in there that I was like, wait, they made an animatronic instead of just animating that, which is because at that point technology wasn't good enough to make it look realistic enough. So that you have to go that extra mile, but I think it looks better than it would if they did it now. Like if they did CG now, that wouldn't look as good as how they did it practically.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I read was that like Mr. Tumnus, his whole lower half was CG, but like his ears and everything were animatronic.
Yeah.
So when the ears like wiggled and stuff, it was like controlled by a remote control,
so cool.
Which is something
that's
they would never
cool.
do today.
Is that in like the cast list? Like Mr. Tumnus's ears, played by
well, and like even
Johnny.
All the fake hair and stuff too, and the nose. Like those are all things that now like an actor would just be green dotted and have on one of those contraption things that they do for Marvel stuff. But it's like, you know, they glued all that hair to his body and like his arms and stuff, which like,
well, it probably helped with the performances too, because they're very inexperienced actors and Lucy is very young. So like, I'm sure that really helped with the bond with Mr. Tumnus. Even.
Well, yeah,
like,
I read too.
He didn't
that
have all these dots on his face.
I read that they purposefully did not let her see him before the take where they met for the first time. So that when she...
They didn't even let her see the forest.
Yeah, they didn't let her see the forest. Wow. They didn't let her meet James McAvoy. So, like, when she, like, met him in the movie, that was her first experience with Narnia and meeting Mr. Tumnus. So her reaction was genuine, which is so cute.
That's very cute.
Mm. I love James McAvoy.
Me
too.
He is so good in this movie. He's so underrated. He's, like, one of the best actors working today. And I just think that, like... He is not praised enough.
Mm. Yeah, I agree.
Well, and I love watching this when you're a little older and you're knowing, and obviously you go in knowing that he's kidnapping her. There's like so many like little red flags that I'm like, this something is not right here in this scene. Like when they're in the, when like getting the tea and stuff, like there's such like a really great sense of impending doom that they have in those scenes where it's like, it does feel magical, but also like there's something a little off about this guy.
Yeah.
I think that's probably like one of my favorite scenes is just her first going to Narnia and her meeting Mr. Tumnus. And like, I think that really establishes both like the beauty of Narnia, but also the danger and a lot of the stakes were like immediately as soon as Lucy goes into Narnia, she's kidnapped. Like, that's the first thing that happens to her.
Yeah, I said that to Zach. I said, this is the first watch through. I think it changes where, like, I'm consciously, like, saying to myself, like, he is trying to kidnap her. So I think watching his performance then, and then, yeah, those little red flags of what he's doing to, oh my gosh, I was going to say, like, entice her. But
creepy. Like, we were watching, you're like, what is this? This guy is, something is up with this guy.
Yeah.
Talking about kids. Yeah. The sardines line was could have been a big misstep though, because like he's lucky she likes sardines, but if she had gotten like a regular person, like that line would not have worked.
Well, even the lullaby he starts playing for her sounds like pretty sinister. Like I feel like if I were there, I'd be like, "What are you playing right now? Like, stop."
It's creepy. A creepy song.
I don't want to hear it.
That part was scary for me too when I was growing up. Mm. Like,
oh yeah,
song he plays. Ooh.
And I have mixed feelings about that. Hannah and I got into a debate about that scene. So up front, I'm not one of those people who's like, but the book, because I'm like, if you want to read the book, like, go read the book. The movie's going to make conventions. I don't like it, though, that there's a literal deus ex machina that stops him from, like, taking her to the White Witch. Like, I don't like that Aslan has to, like, show up and, like, yell at him. Because I'm like, I would have liked it if... It's one of the things in the book where he's just like, no, like, I'm not going to, because I'm not going. I don't like it that someone has to come in and be like, stop. And I get that, like, you could say he was never going to or whatever, and that's just kind of the reminder. But it's a little thing. But even the first time I saw it at the theaters, I was like, ooh, I don't like that.
See, I took it as, like, he almost conjures up, or, you know, whether Aslan's really there or he conjures it up in his mind, it's his own confliction.
Yeah,
and recognizing what he's doing. That's how I...
I don't think it's really Aslan. Like, it could just be, like, his internal, like, self. Like, his conflicting feelings. And that's, like, the visualization of it. And also, that's not when he really decides to take her back, because she goes to sleep after that, and then she wakes up. And then after that... So it's not like he sees Aslan as like, oh, no. This is wrong. I must take you back. Like, I think it's removed enough from the actual scene, but it is interesting because because it's a movie and we're going in expecting Aslan, like, they have to tease it a little more than maybe they do.
That's
in
a good
the
point.
Book, where it's like, oh, this is what Aslan's coming. Don't forget about the big lion, guys.
I was promised Liam Neeson lion.
He's coming. Don't worry.
What did we think about Tilda Swinton as the witch?
I think she's great.
Yeah, she's good.
I mean, here's the thing. I think, like, watching the movie, obviously we have, like, a reason to not like her, but I think it's only really because the movie tells us. Like, I don't think we see much of what she does. She does, like, a couple things, but the way that they're painting her is, like, she's literally the worst person in the world, you know? And I think that a lot of that is just, like, them telling her, like, oh, it's in the prophecies, the White Witch is the evilest in all the land. And I don't think that we would dislike, like, hate her as a character as much if it wasn't for her performance. I think she really sells it in her performance. And because she commits so hard to it, I think it helps you understand how, like, evil she is. Rather, because, yeah. again, yeah. they don't really, because it's a kids' movie, they show a couple things that she does, but they can't really show, like, the awful things that she's obviously done in the past and that she's capable of.
Right.
So I think her performance has to do a lot of heavy lifting.
Yeah, she scares me. I was definitely scared as a kid. It was fun watching it through, like, today and thinking, like, what I saw her in most recently was The French Dispatch.
Oh, yeah.
And comparing her character in that film
to
this.
She's so funny.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I think as a kid, recognizing her as the White Witch in things after, and now, right, with her most, like, a comedic role in this past fall, it's funny. It's nice to see the,
yeah,
her range.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she commits, too. Like,
yeah.
I think that's what everyone in this movie commits to. Like, it's not just a kid's movie. They're really giving it their all in their performances, which is nice to see.
Didn't love her costume design, though. I'll say that. Didn't love it.
Her hair's a little weird.
It's
yeah,
very
I didn't
weird.
Like the dreads.
an interesting choice for the hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
It was fine when it was her with the polar bears on the carriage. Later.
Yes.
I was okay with that.
Yeah. Well, that whole scene is, like, real. And I know, Kayla, you have some stuff you wanted to say about the final battle scene, too. Because I think the final battle scene is, like, really good. Except for the end, which I think the ending, like, wraps up way too quickly. There's some weird pacing things here and there in this movie. As a whole, I think the battle is really well executed.
I would agree. I'm going to say something that it might make me sound insane. But on the other side of the coin, Aslan, and I realize this was 2005, but still, I think the casting of Liam Neeson as the lion is, like, the most boring casting decision you can make. And he's not bad as Aslan. He's good. But, like, I remember hearing it was either him or Brian Cox, and I was just like,
oh, man, imagine Brian Cox as especially now with, like, the roles you've seen him in. Man, yeah. That'd be so funny.
Which I'm not saying that would be better, but it's like, well, he has, like, a softer, like, gentler voice than Liam Neeson. Like, Liam Neeson is the most, like, we need someone with a deep voice to come play this part. Oh, well, yeah. It's him. It's kind of like, that's an area where, like, I wish that they would have taken a risk and maybe, like, has someone with a bit of an older voice. It's just like, it's such obvious casting that it might be a non-issue. I just kind of wish that the movie would have done something to maybe, I don't know, make it stand out a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, and this is the same year as Batman Begins, which I think he's really playing, like, in the beginning of Batman Begins is, like, the same character as Aslan. Like, he has the same tone of voice, the same, like, wise old person that is all-knowing. I wonder if it was interesting, like, watching both those movies when they came out and being like, wow, he's really just doing the same thing.
Well, and I think another problem is because his voice is so, I can't think of a better way to say it, but so masculine sounding that we only spend like 5 minutes with him before his death. So I was like, I don't know. I feel like with a different voice there, I could be feeling like even worse for this character. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even when he has to be, like, vulnerable when he is with the two kids, it's just like, I don't really buy it because it's like, it's Liam Neeson. He's like the coolest guy ever.
I think he just sounds really tired. Like, it almost felt like Aslan the whole time, like, felt so tired. And I'm like, dude, like, aren't you, like, aren't you God? Like, I don't understand why you're right. so like.
Like, you are Aslan. Like, you are who we're leading up
yeah,
to.
Yeah, like, felt like there wasn't any dynamic to the different yeah. scenes mm. where he was, like, like, it was just very flatlined. Like, there wasn't much variation to his emotion in each scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. Like, even at the end, you can hear the light go out of his voice when he has to say it is finished after killing the White Witch. It's like,
yeah.
you didn't want to get one more take of that or, like, change the line or something? Like,
yeah,
really,
maybe come back after a long day. Maybe just go sleep it off. Just do the take again. And just one more time. It's definitely not a great performance. I do think that the CGI and visual, like, practical work they do on Aslan is really good. And is, like,
better than the new
really,
Lion King.
I
like,
think it's
what
better
makes
than
me...
Lion King, too.
It's so much, but it's way better yeah. than Lion King. And it's, like, what makes the character? Like, I don't think of Liam Neeson's voice when I see Aslan or think of this movie. I just, like, the visual of Aslan is more prominent in my mind than, like, the character. Because I do think, even in the books, like, he's not a very interesting character. I mean, he's not what I read the books for. Like, he's the hero, but, like, I'd rather spend time with the beavers again or something else.
Yeah.
Tumnus seems more like my vibe, aside that he might try to kidnap me, but, like...
Yeah, right. Besides the whole kidnapping thing, he seems like he'd be pretty cool to hang out with.
Yeah, he seems like he has, like, some cool records at his over at his place, like, you know, like, making good tea. Yeah,
he seems
like
he'd
cool.
be like, I got this really underground artist that no one's ever heard of, and then he just pulls out, like, Illinois, and he's like, guys, listen to this one.
He's definitely a stoner, Spearman. For sure, in real life.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
I also thought that it was interesting in this movie that, and this is going to be, I don't know how we'll feel about this, that not all the Narnians are British. Mm-hmm. I thought that was cool because, you know, a lot of times when I was in the stage production, they were like, everybody do a British accent. And I was like, even the Narnians, they're like, yeah, do a British accent for that too. Stupid. I was like, is Narnia in England? But, like, when you look at the cast, it's just, like, a widespread. Like, you have James McAvoy, who's, you know, he's Scottish, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you have, like, Michael Madsen of Kill Bill fame, and you've got, like, just across the board, I was like, it's a cool casting choice that they felt they didn't have to make this, like, you know, and now every British actor in the world.
Right, yeah, like every other British movie. Like, The Boy Called Christmas, that was last year. That was one of those where it's like, how many British actors can we get in this movie, even if it was just like for 5 seconds in this scene?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I even thought too, like, you know, like Rupert Everett is someone that, like, I hear the name and I recognize, but the Fox was not in it that much, you know? Like, it was still kind of a...
But he is cool. He's a cool fox.
Yeah.
He's one of the cool
people.
I mean, I'll say, like, Jim Broadbent is obviously one of the big pulls. And for all his, like, 5 minutes of screen time, I think he's very good in the movie.
Yeah.
But aside from that, like, it's all, like, moderate to actors you've heard of. But it's not like, I'm sure if they made this today, it would be, like, an A-plus voice, you know, acting list, and probably not as good in that right too, you know.
yeah
they'd put like the thing on Twitter like the cast for Narnia announced, and it's like white person, like it's just like through the list, like 20
Lawrence
people down, like why is this person in this movie?
Yeah, which is, I'm glad they didn't make it now, because I'm not sure if I'm ready to see Kevin Hart and Tiffany Haddish as Mr. and Mrs. Beaver.
Oh my god.
That'd be fun. Recast this movie with like borrowed actors.
That's just one. They're like, we need to make some money. Who's hot right now?
I'm sure they could squeeze The Rock in there somewhere too.
As Aslan, as the voice of Aslan. Impractical, but he's dressed like a lion. Like, if you've ever read the book with like the animation, they have like the kind of like the big one. Aslan actually walks on 2 feet in there. So I was like, oh.
Here's a trivia question for you. How many individual hairs do you think that they animated or CGI'd on Aslan?
I see it in the doc, so I won't say anything.
So here, I'll give you kind of a general idea, is apparently it took approximately 10 hours to render each frame of Aslan.
Are you kidding me?
Oh my God.
No wonder he's in the movie like such a little amount. They're like, no more Aslan. We're done.
They spent so much time with shaved Aslan too. I mean, all right.
I don't know. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking like 3 is popping into my head. Like 300,000 maybe.
Oh, see, I went with like 40,000. Oh. That's where my mind went. 40,000.
All right. Neither of you are even
major
close.
Under here. Yeah.
Are close.
Dang it.
There are 5.2 million individual
I was
going
to go into millions. I was going to say millions.
That only took 10 hours?
Like, 10 I hours feel like to render. 10 hours. I know, it was like 10 days
10
to
hours
render.
Per frame? I mean, that is a lot of time.
Yeah.
Just leave it alone.
Yikes. Yeah.
That is wild.
I mean, if it's...
That's like, why he's not in these movies at all.
I know. They're like, we're done with Aslan. No more.
Yeah.
We can't keep doing this.
Yikes.
They're like, can we just have Aslan actually just die on the stone table? Does he really need to come back? They were like trying to convince the director, like, what about, like, we just leave him there? You know, we don't need him anymore.
I mean, I think it speaks to... You know, just passion in filmmakers. Because I hear that, and I'm just like, oh, wow, that's crazy. But then I think he wasn't in the movie that much. And then I think about, like, just Spider-Verse, for instance, where they're just like, oh, yeah, it took forever to get this movie done. But, like, we believed in it, and it was worth it. So,
yeah,
you know, it's just and interesting.
I think it pays off,
I feel like,
too. Like, he looks
great. Yeah, and I feel like with this movie, they really believed in it. The later ones were more, like, I think made out of obligation. Rather than inspiration, but this one, you could definitely tell like that the animators and everybody are giving it their all for the most part.
Yeah.
And like the director was like the guy who did Shrek 2, so it's not
and
like
Shrek 1. Both
did he do
them.
Shrek 1?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah. And he did Prince Caspian. So
yeah,
he seemed like he definitely like had a real vision for this and really like wanted to do it rather than now. It would be like, who's the guy that did the Jurassic World movies?
Colin Trevorrow, yeah.
Yeah, it'd be like one of his. Like, he's just kind of is in there because they need to make a new series.
Yeah.
But like, it felt like he really wanted to do this and like had a vision for it, which is cool.
Next summer, Narnia, brought to you by Rian Johnson.
Oh my God.
Aslan died.
I think he could do it.
And doesn't come back. I'd be the first one in line.
You know, they
he
still
could do
have
the magician's
like,
nephew.
Yeah.
Or I could Paul. See.
I feel like you need a weirdo for that one.
I could see him doing magician's nephew or like Horse and His Boy, because those are like so different than the original.
Or I think Silver Chair maybe too, because Silver Chair is kind of like a little more subversive, you know.
Yeah.
Before the final, like this is not a great comparison because I do like the last battle, but the last battle kind of feels like the Rise of Skywalker. Where it's like,
I don't like the
they bring
battle.
Them all back to the final their final feast. Like so maybe the Silver Chair is to Narnia what Last Jedi is to Star Wars.
Could be.
That would be
it
great.
Could be. You never know.
That is amazing. Yes. I also don't like Last Battle either.
Yeah, I don't mind it. It's hard to wrap up series like that.
Yeah.
Because the world is so big that he created, and like the fact that there's only 7 books is pretty impressive. Like he was able to get that much story world building.
Narnia as a franchise really doesn't lend itself to being like a movie series, I don't think, because you know when you go see Harry Potter, it's like I can't wait to spend more time with like Harry, Ron, Hermione, and all these people who I like. And then you know Star Wars, even like I can't wait to go spend time with all these characters I like. This one, all the characters you like, they're out by, like, the third movie, and now we have a brand new cast of characters. And by the end, it's like, here's our brand new cast of characters. So it, like, doesn't, like, you really, and I was thinking about this, so I'm like, you really, really have to, like, love the world and lore of Narnia in order to want to go back when the characters you like aren't there anymore.
Right.
And so it's the thing, I was like, but check this out, like, I don't think you can do that in like a movie. You need like a Netflix series or something to really like get people on board.
If they remade it now, one thing I definitely was thinking about when they were having that final battle sequence in the climax of the film is I was like, we would never, ever have a movie like this now. They would never make it like this because all the colors in that scene are so bright.
Yeah.
The sky is bright blue. The grass is bright green. Even when they're like fighting, everyone is wearing bright colors. And I was like, if this was made today, it would be like dark and murky and feel very like a storm is rolling in and this big battle is coming.
Yeah.
Like very over the top dramatic, you know. But
but
at that time, it was bright and oversaturated. And I think it works. And so like when I was watching it, I was
so
like,
too.
Wow, this is really a relic of its time because something like this is not gonna like be made today. And even in the battle when the battle starts so slow too, where it's like they're just standing there and Peter's just sitting on the horse and they're, you know, looking back at Edmund, and it takes like 3 or 4 minutes for this battle to even start. And I was like, that also would not happen today. Like it would just go straight into the action. Like they're not gonna give you any downtime.
And it's interesting, speaking of like, you know, now movies looking like way darker, you know who the screenwriters for this film were, right?
Not off the top of my head.
They went on to write Captain America the Winter Soldier and Infinity War and Endgame and like the later Captain America movies. So it's interesting to see them like go from writing this and then Caspian and Don Treader to doing this. Like it's really interesting, like what a different director, you know, because it's basically the same studio, but what a different director can do to your movie. I'd say those Avengers movies have like those like Bucky and Cap moments where like they look at each other before like they're fighting, they have those little conversations, but you make a good point, it just looks hideous.
And, like, I'm someone that, you know, when Marvel trailers drop on Twitter and everyone's like, there's no color, oh my god. Like, I don't care because I'm like, it's always going
to
look different on Twitter than it does on the screen. But I think this is, like, you know, watching this and being like, oh, wow, like, this is very different. Like, not to trash on current movies, but it would just be made so differently if it was made in this time. Like, it would just be, I think, I don't know, it wouldn't have the same charm that I think it holds when it was made in 2005.
I agree.
It is interesting because now we've got the Narnia series and potentially movie and like, I don't know exactly what, that they're developing with at Netflix. And I think I heard like they're going in more of a Game of Thrones inspired thing, which makes sense because that's like that's the marker now, as like that's like what Lord of the Rings was to this movie is like now what fantasy is, because they're like trying to take what is
to TV
now.
And
so this, it makes sense, but I just don't like in that battle it would just be like the Game of Thrones like last season battle that was super dark and no one could see, like that's what fantasy is now, is like really gritty like lore based stuff, where like this movie has some lore but it doesn't really dive too heavily into the lore where you feel like you're just getting it's getting lost in it, which is what I think that now with like Marvel and with just the Game of Thrones, like these series, they are more lore based, and I don't think that Narnia really works as a movie if it's more into the lore, because the lore is weird. Like Narnia is a weird world.
It's like weird stuff from the Bible that you have to
like, it's a weird world that like kind of doesn't make sense because like it's all the books are so different and they don't really fit together in the same way that like maybe Lord of the Rings does, where like that is a very well-established interconnected world with all the books. And with Narnia it's a lot just like more abstract. So I think that I don't know like how the new series will go. I hope they lean more into just the fantastical stuff, because I do think that after superhero movies, fantasy could be like the next big thing.
I think
like,
it
there's
is
always like a big thing.
I think, like, it will be. Yeah.
This could be one of the launching pads, you know? Like this could be a big thing.
Based on book trends that are like really popular, like young adult books right now, is like fantasy is back in. Like it was out for a while, but I think like now with like Shadow and Bone and Court of Roses and whatever all those books are. But sure, like they just yeah. did like a Shadow and Bone series combined with Six of Crows on Netflix that did really well. So I think like that kind of stuff is making a comeback now.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. Not years ago, but when we did this episode for Godfellas, I had just watched, I don't know if you've seen Dark Crystal: Age of Resistance on Netflix, which is the show that they made. And I was like, man, with Narnia, in order for anyone to care, you would have to do something like drastically different. And like in my mind, I bummed myself out because I was like, I don't know, what if you just had like the Jim Henson puppet people just come in and make Narnia? Just like have all the creatures be puppets. Like just do something different than like CGI. Mm. But I mean, I get that that's not everybody's favorite thing, but like, in my dream of dreams, Jim Henson Company, if you're listening, I would love, call Netflix and make it happen, please.
Well,
yeah.
We could very realistically in 2 years be living in like the world where the Narnia series on Netflix and then the Lord of the Rings series on Amazon are like the two biggest things in pop culture. Like that seems like a very realistic thing.
That would be so crazy.
Yeah.
That would be like completely reliving like 2003 to 2010 of my life, which would be so crazy. Mm-hmm.
I don't know why everybody is so afraid of Magician's Nephew, because it's like such a cool. It's such a cool book with so much awesome imagery, and it's action packed. Yeah. Like it's when I'm like, why wouldn't you start the party?
That was my
like,
favorite
with
as
this
a kid.
One.
Well, and it really establishes the universe, too. Like, I just, it makes so much more sense to do that one and just be like, but everyone always wants to start with Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. But it's like, we've had so much of Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Why not be like, Narnia, and then it's the Magician's Nephew. What? Like, crazy.
We're going to speak the Magician's Nephew production into
manifest
existence.
Manifest it?
In the next.
Yes, please.
We're going to manifest
one.
It for the next.
Magician's
it's
Nephew.
Coming.
Imagine like 8 episodes like of Magician's Nephew.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, I would love
really
it.
Great.
I'm here for it.
I'd even want to see a horse and his boy.
I love like, horse and his boy too. Those are my two favorites.
One of my
Magician's
favorites.
Magician's Nephew and horse and his boy. Those are my two favorite books.
Not a horse and his boy fan. Not gonna lie. Not.
Yeah, me neither.
I don't know
definitely
why.
My
I
least
really
favorite.
Like that one.
I really like that one too, Hannah. It's like it's really good.
Can't get on that bandwagon with you, but
me
love
neither.
It. The, love it for you.
The ones that weren't films were the books I enjoyed the most. Mm. And maybe that just speaks to the power of reading, but I'm not really a reader, though. I don't know why I'm saying that. I don't really like to read. So, like,
the power of reading.
You played yourself.
The power of reading, yeah. What am I saying right now? You know, like, but, I would like to see, like, The Magician's Nephew, Horse and His Boy. Sure, I'd see the silver chair, you know, see that come to life, an interpretation of that. So, you know, whatever happens with, you know, this Netflix series, I'd like to see something. Mm-hmm.
Oh, and we're getting Percy Jackson too now too. So
Jackson show. So that's Disney.
Yeah. So
those three
they're
shows.
Literally like bringing back everything from my childhood, which is so crazy. Like that trends just like repeat themselves. But I feel like when I was that age, like. For me, because we weren't allowed to watch Harry Potter at that time, the big thing was Narnia and Lord of the Rings, and then Percy Jackson kind of like when I got into middle school. So it's just so crazy to like have a revival of these things now as an adult, which I think is smart because we're like nostalgia is big right now. Like, so I just think the adults are the target audience. Like, for all this stuff.
We're going to get the Aragorn series on HBO Max.
I'm here for it. If they remade Aragorn, please.
Dang. Yeah, that'd be wild. And I think it'd be interesting to then compare to this because, like I said, there's like the early 2000s is so media is like so much more film based and it's like, 3 movie trilogy but now it's a lot more like content. So it's it'll be interesting to see like the difference.
Yeah.
Cause I don't know if fantasy is as conducive to content overload as other things, like even like a sci-fi because I don't think fantasy is as much about the lore or like the deep lore, I guess.
Sure.
It's more about like just the world and like invest in just like the feeling than just like,
yeah,
this is how the world works and these are the rules.
Well, I feel like Narnia also, the rules aren't like ironclad.
Yeah, there's
like,
no
sometimes
rules.
It's there,
too.
Sometimes
yeah.
It's not. Time kind of does its own thing, this and that. So I think that that might be maybe off-putting for some fans.
Hmm.
But, you know, I do think that that maybe also sets them up to do a better series because they're not... There aren't a lot of gatekeepers for the Narnia series.
Hey,
yeah,
I'll gatekeep it. I have no problem gatekeeping Narnia.
We are the magician's nephew gatekeepers.
I just know that, like, I can already envision in... Because I've seen it already with Percy Jackson, now that it's, like, officially greenlit, like, so many people tweeting about it, like, this series is for us, and if these little kids talk about Percy Jackson, it's like, oh my god. But I could just see if, like...
Yeah.
It's like, this is a kid's...
With Narnia
kids books,
stuff, like, people keep retweeting that line, Aslan's line of, like, don't cite the deep magic to me, I knew it before it was written. Like,
yeah,
I
man,
just
that was,
see
that was a
people,
meme so
like,
long ago
posting
now.
That,
man,
that over and over and over, like, this is for us, mm-hmm. not for you. Like...
Yeah. Well, and I think that comes from this movie. This movie, I think, was very big. And I think, like, it made $745 million on $180 million budget. Like, this was
it's
a very
that,
big movie.
It's so, that youth group money. I mean, like, you know.
Taking your whole youth group on opening night.
I mean, that's a great point.
Well, I mean, this is also, we have to remember that for Christianity, this is a post-Passion of the Christ era.
Yeah.
Which is where basically the Christians were like, we're taking over Hollywood. So you saw for a long time, like that was Passion of the Christ was the highest grossing R movie. So then like when a year or two later, Narnia comes out, they're like, I remember every youth group was like buying out churches, we're buying out theaters to go see this movie. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, when it's time to show up, no one shows up like the church to see movies.
Yeah.
And,
remember
you
all
know,
the backlash to the
people.
Golden Compass too? Man,
yes.
that was
we
wild.
We were talking about that earlier.
That was a wild time.
I remember never being allowed to read the Golden Compass or like watch
same.
It.
Yeah.
And that was kind of around the same time. It was a little bit later than this, I think, but it was around the same era of like early fantasy kind of genre coming in from like this to, you know, maybe 2012, ending with like Hunger Games and the end of Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And look, I'm very excited to see Jacob Tremblay play Edmund in the Netflix series.
he's going to be old enough to play Peter now.
I know. Fine. He can play Peter and then.
I could see it.
And
I
then
could
you
see
can be
him
Edmund.
Playing Peter.
I'll be Edmund. Yeah. Yeah.
They'll make like McKenna Grace Susan. Like. I don't know any other child actors.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of ones that are a little bit younger, but...
Lucy, like, I feel
or
like
British.
With Lucy, it's got to be, like, someone that we probably don't even know, because they'll cast her at, like, 5, and, like, we don't know anyone that's, like, I don't know any 5-year-old actors. I'll be interested to see where this series goes, or, like, I mean, or how the reboot goes, because I know that there's still people holding on to the silver chair that's, like... apparently still
Let
in production
go.
That thing is that movie is gone.
I feel like it's been in production for a decade.
Truly, like it's still on Letterboxd, like with the logo, like a tight like a logo on there, and it's like this just needs to be taken down and we need to accept that it's not happening.
And I
think
it's good because I think like these movies got like we said got worse. I think they were responding to how movies like were evolving. Because this comes out in 2005, and like we said, it's very self-serious. Like, just in it does what it wants to do. And The Voyage of the Dawn Treader seems, in Prince Caspian a little, and then Dawn Treader, it seems just like the most trying to conform to what the studio wants and what they think audience wants, which is like bigger action, cool set pieces, and leaning on the characters we know. Because The Voyage of the Dawn Treader movie is a much different movie than the book. It's basically not like I'm not like, oh, it's got to be just like the book, but it's like it's not even the same story. Like they just take like the Dawn Treader and they're like, okay, it's a ship. Now let's do whatever we want with the ship. Like, they don't really follow the book at all.
Dawn Treader, it feels like a chapter a night story, like that you read your kid a chapter a night because it's totally different.
Dawn Treader is such a good book. That is one of my favorites.
So, like, on TV, it works because it's just like, the next episode is the next adventure. The next episode is the next adventure. And you don't have to, like, try to make it all make sense.
You know what I would hate, though? Would be, like, a Mandalorian-style Dawn Treader series where it's just called, like, Dawn Treader. And every episode is just a new adventure.
You know that's what they're going to do, though. You know. You can't say that because you know it's going to happen.
Reaper Cheap, yikes. Baby Reaper Cheap. You know, it's all it's all coming.
I'm gonna buy into it. I'm gonna be honest. Like, I'm ready to spill my money on it. Not gonna lie. Like,
I would love for my students to stop talking about Baby Yoda and start talking about Reaper Cheap.
Man, what a world that would be.
That's the world I'd like to live in someday.
I don't have much more to say on this. Like, it's just a movie that I enjoy. And I'm glad I was a part of my childhood because I think I think it has a lot of very good technique and filmmaking things going on. And that's not something that is easy to get to kids. Like, a lot of the stuff they're doing in this movie, like a very well put together fantasy story that has, like, I don't know, some very unsubtle subtext, but subtext. So you can read into something. And I'm glad that it was like such a big, because I think, like, this movie informed a lot of what I like in this kind of storytelling.
Yeah.
And I wish that more movies were like it, because I think that it is a good kind of movie for, like, the film industry is this kind of story.
I mean, obviously, people are going to bring up the strong Christian overtones, but one of the things that, like, jumped out to me on this watch that I thought was really interesting is also, like, 2005 is where we were also seeing, like, the internet really start to become its own monster in some ways, especially with, like, news articles and really, like, hey, if whatever you want to believe, you can go and, you know, find something that'll support that. On this watch, I was particularly moved by the scene where they're talking to the professor and they're like, there can't be a land in the wardrobe because, like, Edmund even said so. And he's like, okay, so he tells the truth more often. And it was just an interesting thing, like, to have a kid's movie that's saying, like, hey, like, you can find ways to believe whatever you want to believe, basically. But, like, the thing about, like, the truth is, one way or another, we can all figure it out using our heads. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was, like, low-key really cool and interesting, like, especially in, like, a movie that's targeted at families. And I don't know how many people pick up on that. And I'm sure that wasn't, you know, C.S. Lewis's intent. But I think, like, this does set itself up to be a, you know, a series that can have commentary that isn't annoying, I think.
Yeah, that isn't, like, base level, the same, like, oh, we're all the same on the inside, like, just like the same over and over, like, subtext that kids movies reach for because they're the easiest to get in there.
And like, the cynicism of this movie I kind of dig. Like, it's a little cynical in that it's like Edmund is a jerk and bad things happen to him because he's a jerk.
I mean, he's a jerk. I do think Edmund gets a bit of a bad rap, I'm not gonna lie, but okay, like, he didn't know the implications of what he was, like, they're like, Edmund betrayed us and he is the reason that we are losing, and, like, he didn't know that there was a big war going on. He just ran into this person in the woods who gave him food.
My thing looking at it this time when I watched it as an adult who, like, works with children is I was like, this is such a trauma, like, response by Edmund, because, like, he literally is living through a war. He doesn't know if his dad is dead. He clearly, like, his dad is his hero. He's displaced from his home. He's, like, living in a stranger's home. And, like, that doesn't justify, you know, him being mean to Lucy and all these things. But I think when you look at it as a perspective from adult, as I was like, ooh, like, I, like, obviously he is being a bit of a jerk, but, like, you have to understand that he is a 10-year-old who is being manipulated by an adult. Like, he's the victim here, you know? Like, he's being manipulated by the witch.
Yeah, and he's a 10-year-old middle child. So
classic.
I think that also speaks into. Yeah. But yeah, I like that you show, I at least I can't remember exactly in the books, but like I like at least in the difference between this movie and Prince Caspian, I think they do a good job at showing how much Edmund has grown you know, gotten perspective on the choices that he made in the first time they were in Narnia. Mm.
Did anyone else try to find Turkish Delight as a child or no?
I definitely would have loved to have it. Like, it looks
I've
so good in this
movie, I've heard it's not very good.
It's disgusting. It's
I've heard that it's not
It was
good.
When I had it, I was like, are they trying to say, like, Edmund's a bad person because this is his favorite candy? Or was C.S. Lewis just, like, old and, like, the kids love the Turkish Delights?
I just thought, like, it just looks so good in this movie. Like, it looks like the best thing I have ever tried. Like,
it's good enough for him to betray his family. And
I will trade my family in for as much Turkish delight as I can get.
It's not good. It's a bad candy.
All right. The final thing I will say about this movie is that this time when I was, like, when you're a kid watching this, like, I was around Lucy's age when I first watched this. So I was like, oh, I want to be Lucy. And then as you get older, it's like, ooh, I want to be Susan, or I want to, like, wield a sword like Peter. And now
I wanted to be Peter.
And now when I watch it, I was like, man, I want to be the mysterious professor who is, like, in his study and, like, has an air of mystery around him. And the kids come in and it's like, but what if it is real? Like, that is my golden life now, is to strive to become that person.
It's a good post-credit scene with him.
That's it. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know about you. I want to be the beaver. That's what I'm
I was just saying, the beaver's house looks like ideal.
Yes.
Yeah. Cottagecore.
Cottagecore vibes.
Perfect.
A tunnel to your best friend's house. Lots of great stuff going
on
for the beavers.
I was going to say, aside from the kidnapping, I feel like I pretty much live Tumnus's life.
You do. Yeah. Can confirm you don't kidnap.
Right, thank you.
Just want to put that out publicly. Yeah.
Do you think that Tumnus and the beavers, like, were tight? Do you think, like, they, like, had, like, dinners together? Maybe they probably would have to go to his house.
I don't think so.
It would be very comfortable.
No, I don't. I think Tumnus, like,
big friends, big fun group.
How does Tumnus work for the witch and they don't? I think Tumnus, like, took out one too many bad loans. And, well, like, he got stuck with her.
I don't think
he works
for the witch. I thought it was just, like, a rule, like, there's this prophecy about these kids and or humans. And
if
you ever see a human,
just, like,
you need to tell
general...
me. Hey, in the play that I was in, I played the wolf, and Tumnus was my employee who was not good at his job. Mm. So I'm going.
That's a wild side story there, man.
It is.
The Adventures of Mr. Tumnus and the Wolf.
Yeah, we don't have money for the show to go back and forth from Narnia to the real world, so the whole thing just takes place here, folks.
Oh, wow.
It's not a good show.
Zach did great, though.
Yeah, no, we'll post a picture on our, like, Twitter and Instagram story.
Oh, my goodness.
Thank you, Zach, in the play.
Let us know if you guys want us to do Prince Caspian, too. I actually would be more interested in doing Prince Caspian. I like rewatching because I have not seen Prince Caspian so long.
Yeah.
I know. Right now I'm kind of like, let's go start it when we're done. Like,
It's a good book. I think it gets a bad rap. It's like,
it's fine. Emo, like, it's not.
It's like the emo child. Like, Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe is like childlike wonder, and Prince Caspian is emo, like, in my feelings, relationship drama. Love it.
And I love the Switchfoot song and the Regina Spektor song.
Started
in the movie.
Out as a feeling.
Yeah.
That ending song is such so good.
I love the song.
Do you like
not
the Switchfoot?
I don't like the Regina Spektor song in the context of the movie because it comes out of nowhere and I was
but the song itself is.
Yeah, the song is amazing. Yeah. In the movie, I was like, what?
So going into our question of the week then, our question for you all is, what is your favorite pre-2010 fantasy movie? So this could be anything pre-2010. We are specifically thinking like when this came out, obviously. So Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, like that era, that fantasy era we were talking about. The like...
Yeah. And, you know, not pre-2010. That's right before the Percy Jackson movie where it all started going downhill, you know?
And right before Marvel. Right before the Marvel craze.
Right before Marvel.
Yeah.
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 So let us know your answers to that and we'll read them in the next episode. You can answer it on any of our social medias, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Just search Secondhand Film Critics when we're on there.
Yep.
And The Lord of the Rings is not a movie. It's a trilogy. You have to pick one, people.
Yeah, good call. Good one. Call.
Same with Harry Potter. Harry Potter is not one movie. You have to pick one.
MCU is my favorite movie.
Oh, God.
So you go to, like, film school, your first class, like, everyone, what's your favorite movie? The MCU. That's my favorite movie.
Goodness gracious.
Do you guys want to say where you can find your podcast and kind of, like, maybe what's coming up that people can listen to?
Yeah. You can find us at Godfellas, the pod. So that's Goodfellas, but with one O, the pod. And we discuss/criticize Christian media of all sorts, children's, current, old. It's
seniors.
A good time.
Yeah.
We are upcoming episodes. We're releasing our review of The Eyes of Tammy Faye on Wednesday. And then next Wednesday is Joseph King of Dreams. So really, and then the next one will be Christian Mingle. So we've got quite a variety coming up.
Christian Mingle
this February. The Holy Trinity.
Doesn't Christian Mingle have Lacey Chabert in it?
And it's directed by Sean's dad from Psych.
I have some interesting stories about him, Corbin Brinson.
Secrets of the trade.
Yeah.
Speaking of secrets of the trade, what is our next episode?
Our next episode will be, we've just been hitting all of our series in the past couple weeks.
That's what happens in January.
When we have
nothing
else to do,
no one wants to hear them talk about the 355.
Yeah,
like,
no,
I mean, come on.
No way.
Yeah, would not
we
be
could,
doing that.
We could have done a King's episode and reviewed the King's man and the King's
daughter.
Right, which are both out right now.
Oh my goodness.
I think we're good.
No, we'll be doing a We've Never Seen 21 Jump Street, which should be fun, hopefully, is what we're thinking. That's why we chose it.
Yeah.
Lord and Miller are my king, so.
So check that out when we drop that. When we always release episodes, which is Tuesday at 10 a.m. Eastern time. And leave us a 5-star review while you're at it, you know? It helps the pod. It helps us in our self-esteem. That was a joke, but also not really. Yeah, you can do that if you want.
Wow. For Narnia!
For Narnia!
All right, well, until next time, I'm Noah.
And I'm Kayla.
And I'm Zach.
And I'm Hannah.
And we're...
We're your
second-hand
film critics!
Wow, perfect.